Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Jack knew something was wrong. He'd forgotten Giles' advice. Giles said three words.
Tuesday, listeners, this is Patrick, and you are tuned in to the Rockin' the Suburbs podcast. My normal co-host, Jim Linehan, a longtime friend and founder of this podcast, is not here this week. He's away on what we call dad business, as I mentioned yesterday. So I'm back at you. Since it's Tuesday, I figured why not have a twofer on the book nooks. And let's open up the doors on a little segment we call Patrick's Book Nook. Welcome to the Book Nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's a Kindle? As always, the tall, talented, and lovely Mike Wagner there with the composition, and I add a little vocals, but it was fun to do that collaboration with Mike on the Book Nook theme, and it's nice to hear it, isn't it? Gives you a good sense of happiness and joy when you listen to the Book Nook theme song. Today, I wanted to talk about something I hinted at yesterday. Recently, in our home, we went through a little bit of reorganization, and one thing we did was kind of cleaned up a bunch of crap that we all have laying around. But we organized all the books that I have had stuffed in corners, and I had some in different rooms and in closets, and you know, wedged into under tables and into crawl spaces and things like that. And we got them all and got some nice bookshelves and put them all in one room. And when I was doing that, I was trying to organize them a little bit. You know, at least separate the novels from the music books, and the music books are about 50% of all the books we have, which is a sizable number. I'm not sure how many there are, but anyway, I was organizing all my record guides, and I got my record guides here. So I thought I would spend just a few minutes today talking about my record guides and the importance they had to me. And in doing so, we got to start with the Rolling Stone record guide, the new Rolling Stone record guide, I should say. This is the version that came out in 1983, and I probably got it not long after that. I was definitely still a high schooler, wearing the short pants there, and just started working in a record store. Grew up listening to Kiss. Anyone who's listened to this podcast knows that, and expanded into more traditional classic rock, and I had a little bit of a grounding in country music from my mom, and Marty Robbins, Johnny Cash, and things like that, and some traditional music from my family. But this was the first time I really began to understand the depth and breadth of rock music, and this book mainly covers rock and soul, and some blues and some R&B and things like that, and some bluegrass. But it's really even looking back on it as I'm flipping through the pages here, it's a really solid overview of a lot of music. And the first thing I did was decide to make a list of all the 5-star albums and make that my goal to try to collect them. And I gave it a shot. I'll tell you, as the years went on, you would use that employee discount. And I remember every year around Christmas of the 4 or 5 years I worked there that you got a 50% off employee discount on everything. But there's a lot of, this book has fallen apart in incredible ways. I mean, there's lots of pages that have come out and been ripped out, and the binding has been taped here at least I don't know, two or three times with duct tape and some packing tape and things to try to hold it together. I ended up actually buying a newer copy of this when I saw it in a used record store down in Nashville a few years back. I've got some heavy marks here next to the jam, some plus signs and some circles. And I think at one point here, I was indicating that all mod cons, setting suns and sound effects shouldn't be 4-star albums. They should be 5. Interesting things this book taught me too is, you know, I didn't really understand that bands' careers could be broken down in these different phases. And it's cool in a lot of these sections here for The Who specifically, and The Stones as well. You know, there'd be sort of the early period albums and maybe some of their classic ones. And then there's a break and there's a lot of discussion, you know, writing about all those records. And then there's another section with more records. And I don't think I ever really, you know, conceptualized the fact that, wait a minute, every album The Who made is not classic 5-star album. Like, what do you mean? How can they have a 3-star album? And just learning about the dips and ups and downs, especially with the Stones, is really fascinating too. And they went into, you know, a different period. And again, this book cuts off around 1984 or 83, I think. And, you know, the list of 5-star LPs quickly expanded to include some 4-star LPs by a lot of the bands that I really liked. And I began focusing on collecting people like The Who and Springsteen and, you know, those foundational bands like The Stones, and learning about all the Beatles albums and the Bob Dylan albums too. And the dreaded mark in this book is the black square. And that's like an album that should, I think their classification is like, here's an album that should be melted down immediately. And I think there's one here. Yes, Dylan, the self-titled album Dylan on Columbia 1973 is one of those black boxes next to it. And that was something else that I couldn't really get. Like, it can't be that bad. The Saved album gets 1-star. The Christian period here gets really the short shrift. And I think most of these reviews are written by Dave Marsh and John Swenson, maybe with a few other people contributing. Interestingly enough, another page I marked here is Faust, and this book really opened my eyes for the first time to the existence of music outside of the United States and the UK. Like, what is this German band? Holy crap, they got 2, 3, 4-star albums. Like, this is amazing. And also next to it is a note that says, "See Can." So I was connecting the dots with Krautrock too. That was the Bible. And also, you know, they had this outer print signifier in this book. It was kind of like a sort of like a paragraph symbol. What do you mean this record don't make it anymore? Like, how is that possible? I thought all records were available, you know, just had to find them. I didn't know they stopped making them. And there's also some pretty hilarious, you know, reviews of bands that nobody's ever heard of. Maybe not even then. There's one by a band called Creed. And it has one of those black boxes, so it's a record that should be melted down. And the review is 10 years after, pathetic. And Peter Criss over here on the facing page, in which the former Kiss drummer reveals that in his heart of hearts, he'd rather be Barry Manilow, 1-star for both of his albums. That's a little harsh. I mean, I think the first one like it too. But anyway, yeah, it's, you know, this book really helped shape my foundation of my record collecting. And then, you know, the interesting thing about the Rolling Stone record guide was that it really doesn't touch on any punk, indie, or new wave music, very slightly. I mean, I think the Television albums get like 2 stars in there. So these were more established, old school Rolling Stone critics who didn't really give a lot of time and space and consideration to a lot of these bands, especially in 1983, which is a shame. And the books for me that filled that guide were the Trouser Press record guides. I have here in front of me, I think I have 3 or 4 of these. I have here in front of me the 4th edition of the Trouser Press Record Guide, subtitled The Ultimate Guide to Alternative Music. And it's funny, opening up on the first page, this book is really good on indie rock and alternative and new wave and punk and even some reggae and ska and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you can find a lot of bands in here just flipping through, you know, that seem to me like to be staple bands, but also a lot that you've never heard of, you know, even in this day and age. And this really legitimized the fact that indie music, when I started getting into it, was collectible and taken seriously and just as legitimate as any other kind of music. The Trouser Press Record Guide does not offer any kind of score or star rating or anything like that. It simply gives a list of a lot of the records made by these artists, and then, you know, sort of ranks them in the reviews. And it's funny, I have at the beginning, in the opening page, I've listed a whole bunch of bands that should be in this book, but apparently we're not. And that's pretty funny. As I begin to get deeper and deeper into it, I'm like, this band's not even in the Trouser Press Record Guide. What good could it be? But yet this, you know, taught you all about the next level of bands and helped you understand and find what these records were. Obviously, Discogs, you know, didn't exist. So you needed these bands like to learn about records that Sonic Youth had made earlier on. And you know, the same way you learned about the staple bands from the Rolling Stone Record Guide, you learned about them here. I mean, there's a whole big section, for example, here on Kraftwerk that you didn't get in the other book. And, I mean, look, there's, I don't know, 6 or 7, 8 paragraphs on Half Man, Half Biscuit.
So he sent his doting mother up the stairs with the stepladders to get the Subutio out of the loft. He had all the accessories required for that big match atmosphere, the crowd and the dugout and the floodlights too. You'd always get palmed off with a headless centre forward and a goalkeeper with no arms and a face like his. And he managed to get hold of a Duke of Prague away kit, cause his uncle owned a sport shop and he kept it to one side. And after only 5 minutes, he'd be down to 10 men, cause he'd sent off your right back for taking the base from under his left winger. And come to half time, you were losing 4-0. Each and every goal, a hotly disputed penalty. So he'd smash up the floodlights and the match was abandoned. And the dog would bark and you'd be banned from his house. And your travelling army of suspected supporters would be...
Funny, weird English people. I'd never heard of them before. And now, you know, I can, when I see the Half Man, Half Biscuit record, I can actually know what it is and maybe buy it, which I ended up doing. In some ways, the internet has subsumed it in some ways. I think Trouser Press is online, and you can find a lot of this stuff. But back then, you know, it really was really key. And I always loved to see the updates in each edition. Ira Roberts, of course, the editor of this, which was a long-running Trouser Press, of course, long-running magazine. This one, copyright 1989, the 4th edition. And then I have the 5th edition here, where I continue the list on the front page of bands that should be in there but are not. The Trouser Press Guide to 90s Rock. And this one came out in 1997, so it was kind of the next update. And, you know, continues in much the same style. And I think a lot of these books, when they came out with a new edition, may have reprinted, you know, a lot of the previous reviews, maybe tidied them up a little bit, but served as an essential guide to my record collecting as well. And then I just really quickly wanted to mention a couple of jazz record guides. The first one I ever got was a Rolling Stone jazz record guide, and it's very, very high level. I mean, you know, to list all of Miles Davis's records or all of John Coltrane's records, for example, in one long list, and it goes into the 40s or 50s in the amount of albums, and then to cover his entire career in, I don't know, page and a half, you know, that's very, very condensed. At least I figured out it was later. But it's good to learn about some of these sort of second level jazz people that you didn't know about. And for me, it served as a great introduction to not only the masters, but the people that, you know, were right next to them. And it also, at least for me, was very helpful in having star ratings. When you're very first starting out, you do need to separate the good from the bad, or the good from what some people say is the mediocre. So I really enjoyed that book. But it's this monster over here, the big one. Let's get it. There it is. The Penguin Guide to Jazz on LP, CD, and cassette. A new edition. This thing came out, let's see, Richard Cook and Brian Morton. This copyright is 1994. And let me see how many pages are in. This thing is a behemoth. Including the index, it is 1,513 glorious pages. And they do have a rating system, which is kind of cool. They give stars and are very, very sparing with the stars. So there's a very few that actually get a 4-star rating, and then they actually have a crown that they put next to it for the ultimate rating of 4 stars plus a crown. So anything that these guys, you know, gave 4 stars plus a crown to, it's really, to me, you know, became something I really wanted to try to list, get if I could, and if not, at least listen to. But, you know, the difference being, let's see, as I'm flipping through here, Coltrane, and so whereas the Rolling Stone guide covered in a page and a half, let's see, there's 14 pages on Coltrane alone, and it really goes in depth on a lot of these sets and a lot of these records and why they're so important and so classic. And this to me really was a very, very great guide, and remains that way to the works of the jazz masters and all those that came in their wake. And I've found it invaluable. I've spent much time reading it. And if you're into jazz, I mean, I would recommend picking a copy up if you can find it. Plus, it's cool to have a really big book on your shelf that says jazz on it. People are like, yeah, he's into jazz. All right. But I just wanted to share that with you guys. And that's a little quick trip through my record guide books. Which ones do you have? Was the Rolling Stone record guide important to you? Did you ever get any jazz record guides? Or were there other ones that I missed? I know I have a couple others over there somewhere. I know that Spin once put out an alternative record guide, and there was one called the Definitive Indie Rock Discography that I have up there somewhere. But that was a little more of like an encyclopedia, not necessarily a record guide where they're listing and rating the records. But which ones were you into? I'd love to hear from anybody out there who's into record guides. You can send us an email, rock@suburbspod.com. You can find us on social media @suburbspod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the YouTube, and reach out and let us know. I'd love to hear what you were into and what shaped your record collecting and record journey, musical journeys. Thanks for listening, folks. It's been fun to drop in with a quick book nook, and I'll be back tomorrow with Scott Parks, and we're going to talk about Frank Ocean's amazing record, Channel Orange, which will have its 20th anniversary coming up this summer, but we couldn't wait. We wanted to get into it before summer. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. Thanks for listening. I'm Patrick Foster. And as I said, I'll be back tomorrow to talk to you guys then.
When Led Zeppelin's debut album appeared in 1969, the anticipation built up among knowledgeable music fans, excited over the prospects of Jimmy Page, the Yardbirds' last guitarist, leading his own group. But it was replaced by an equally king-sized disgust. Here was a band that, when not busy totally demolishing classic blues songs, was making a kind of music apparently designed to be enjoyed only when the listener was drugged to the point of senselessness.